You're listening to Punk News Podcast number 498. Let me tell you, people, the world is on fire. We got coronavirus. We got riots in the streets. And is this a season of change? We will find out. We're not going to do a big intro this week because we are going to address some serious things, and then we'll get into our usual routine of goofy stuff. If you were reading Punk News this week on Tuesday, we were part of the Blackout Tuesday. The Blackout Tuesday is what a bunch of music sites and even some non-music sites, basically, they didn't post anything all day long, and they put like either a black square or a black square with some stuff about the Black Lives Matter movement and some places where you can make donations or get some information or figure out how you can contribute to the movement. As always with one of these things, there was a whole not everyone agreed with how important or how this should be handled. We talked a little bit about it, Punk News, and we just thought, well, we'll just do a statement. We'll go along that. We'll post links to resources, and then we'll go from there, because it's not necessarily – I mean, Punk News – this is not a story for Punk News to drive for. This is really a story for us to be a small part of, along with millions of other people and organizations. But I think what's crazy at this point, one thing is I remember like when Trump was elected, like you would read these quotes from people in Europe that says, how come people aren't marching in the streets and protesting? How come people aren't rioting? Well, people are now, and there have been some changes. So we'll see. I think a lot of things are going to change. I think I'm just going to give my opinion of the Trump tactic, because if you've been following him on Twitter, he's just been doubling down, calling protesters a fundamental backbone of the American Constitution, Article 1, Section 1, Clause 1. He's been calling them hoodlums and bad people and this and that. And he's saying, when the looting starts, the shooting starts. And I think this really underscores where we're at as a country. And that's – it's not what's the moral thing to do. It's not what's the correct thing to do. It's not what can we do as a community. You can say what you will about Ronald Reagan and so forth, but I think you can make the argument at least Ronald Reagan and those guys thought what they were doing was morally correct. And what I would say one of the phenomena about Trump is that he's made it clear there is no morality. It's not a question of morality. There is no question of what's good for everybody, what's best for everybody. It's my team versus your team. And I think the Republicans have doubled down on that. So really, it's just going to come down to numbers. Who's going to outvote who? The problem on the Republican side is it might last for 4 years. It might last for another 4 years. But all the young people hate him. They hate him. And so his numbers will decrease. And the people that don't like him, the numbers are increasing. So I think Trump's strategy is probably good for Trump himself. But for the Republican Party, I think they've played their hand very poorly. And I think we're on a momentous sea of change. If not now, then in 4 years, or maybe even before them, if things get crazier. So I think it's fair to say everyone at Punk News supports the Black Lives Matter movement, or at least the underlying sentiment. And I don't know if there's anything that we can really do to help out aside from share information. And everyone can ask, how can I help? How can I be kind to my common man? And I think that's what everyone should be asking. I think that's what a lot of people aren't asking. Welcome to Punk News Podcast, number 498, John's Statement of the Union. Let's play a song. I'm going to play a song. This is by a gentleman I'd never even heard of, and that's what's great about music. This is a guy from 1948. Adam and M, have you ever heard of Gory Carter? I had never heard of this guy ever.
No, I can't say I've heard of him.
Nope.
I never heard of – go ahead. Was that Adam?
That was a nope.
I had never heard of this guy ever. And then someone, actually, I should name the guy from Nathan Carson of Witch Mountain posted this online. And he's like, listen to the intro of this song. And let me tell you, people, when you listen to the intro of this song, it will blow your mind, because it makes the argument that rock music developed way earlier than any of us thought it did, you know. So this is Rock a While by Gory Carter, 1949. Firmly within the big band era, just after World War II, before the Chicago blues era, and this song will blow your mind. This is Gory Carter doing Rock a While, and we'll be back. And that was Corey Carter doing Rock a While. Adam was somewhat hesitant about my intro speech, but I felt as Punk News, we should sort of address why we did Blackout Tuesday and where we're at personally. And Adam, I don't know if any of you disagree with what I said. If you do, feel free to chime in.
No, not at all, John. My issue, and I really shouldn't have to complain, or like I shouldn't complain about this because everyone has, you know, like way more pressing problems than my feelings. But I think like a lot of big dumb white liberals that are trying to figure out how best to help. What I found is the last few days have just been, you know, you think you're doing the right thing and you proceed down that path, and then a bunch of other like slightly more woke big dumb white liberals tell you what you're doing wrong, and then you course correct and you try to do the next thing and you think you're on the side of angels, and then no, it turns out that the same people that you were just talking to 10 minutes ago are going to tell you that you were doing that bit wrong. And I feel a little bit I'm gun shy because I don't want to detract at any point from any of the black voices from these communities that are directly grappling with the aftermath of George Floyd's murder. But I just feel that like my universe is just dominated by my peers who are all chipping at each other about how like you're not being the right kind of ally. And it's just been like that, like for the past 2 or 3 days. So just saying anything or not saying anything are both like equally fraught right now. And I just want to like hide under a blanket.
Yeah, let's not get too deep into this. But one thing, and this goes back to my initial spiel, in that it is amazing how the right wing, no matter who it is, they're like, this is our guy, we're all together, we're going to beat up, you know, the jerks, you know. And the left side constantly is tearing itself down. I don't know why that is.
I guess it's one of those things that is, it's part of the nature of the politics, in that part of being, I think, on the left of something, of the left of the political spectrum, I guess, is that you're opening yourself up to being wrong. You're opening up your opinions and your views to being challenged and reevaluated. And you know, you're accepting the fact that, you know, you don't necessarily have the supreme moral opinion or judgment on everything. Like the whole idea is that it's, you know, it's change, it's improvement and stuff like that, which means that you also have to then, you know, take it upon yourself that you should be changing and improvement. And improving and all that kind of stuff. And I get that. And, you know, certainly nothing that I've done either, maybe ever, is necessarily bulletproof. But just, I feel like a lot of folks on the left, a lot of my buddies on Twitter and Instagram and something and all that stuff, they're entirely well-intentioned, but man, they need a lesson in salesmanship. I guess just that's it, right? So, I don't know. I mean, I didn't want to do this. I didn't want to come on here and like complain about how I'm tired, because like, fuck, like people are getting hurt and like tear gassed and all this kind of stuff. So who gives a shit if Adam is tired? But just, I don't know. That's where my brain is. Sorry.
And more, will we see a return to normality prior to the last 4 years? Can we go back? Do we want to go back, or is normality bad? And feel free to not answer that question, because that is a question that doubtlessly will get you in some kind of fire no matter what. So I'm not even going to have you answer that question. Here's a question I'm going to have you answer. You can always use that podcast at punknews.org. And here's a question from Ernie Seven. Here's what Ernie Seven had to say. Dear Punk News Podcast, once quarantine is lifted, what is the first record you are going to buy? What's the first concert you are going to see? Who's the first friend you're going to go talk to? Don't wimp out. I need answers, from Ernie Seven.
Okay, hold on. We got three questions. We need to make sure we have them itemized here. So, what is it? It's record, show.
Record, concert, and friend.
Record, concert, friend. Okay. All right. I'm not answering that first. I just want the it's up questions. Em, you want to be on the hotspot for this one?
Sure. I'm thinking about the record. That's kind of what's what's stumping me right now. It's like, what have I been listening to? What don't I own? I probably have to say, I've been listening to a lot of Alice Bag recently, like Sister Dynamite. So I'm going to buy Sister Dynamite when all this is over. I need that on CD. First concert, my friend Whisper and I, we bought tickets to go see MCR in Toronto in September. So that's probably going to be the first thing. But I don't know if it's going to get pushed back or what the deal is going to be there. And for friends, I think just like have a day or just like go and visit like maybe like three people on like one day, you know? So it's like a friend day, but not like a massive gathering.
Adam, you're going to gather near the Juggalos, right?
Oh God, I'm going to lick everyone that I come into contact with. Is this like when you first get out of quarantine, but there is still a potentially looming health hazard, or is this like we've all got the shot and we can just run free into the world?
Do I need
to be cautious, John?
I'm going to say yes. That's just me throwing it out there.
Because all right, so. I would love to, like, I think my answer to a lot of these are all going to be the same thing, which is like, I would love to go just like be in a bar and watch a band. Like they're all fucking hurting and all that. And like they keep vanishing on me. I want to go to the Warehouse Concert Hall in St. Catharines, which is my local venue that has just been, you know, making zero money in this time. And I want to walk into the bar and I want to buy a beer from Eric and I want to see whatever fucking band plays on that stage at that point, because that, you know, I miss being able to do that. And I feel like every show that I've ever blown off because I've been too exhausted with the kids or whatever to walk out of the house feels like doubly horrible on me now. So I want to go frequent those kinds of things. I feel like I should, I'd like to go, if there was no particular health concern, the last show that I saw before we all locked down was a probably questionably legal basement show at the Beguiling in Toronto, which is a comic book store. And, you know, I'd be totally down to go back there and continue my life where I left it off and see another band play down there in the basement. So that would be nice for me. Friends, man, you have friends, John? I'm not sure how to there, you know what, there's a handful of people that are just local folks that are, you know, I know professionally that we get together and we have a beer like once or twice a year in a restaurant and just sort of like shoot the shit about our jobs and stuff like that. And on the one hand, I probably don't see those guys every, you know, for 3 months at a time anyways. So I guess the quarantine doesn't matter too much from that standpoint. But, you know, I'd love to reconvene with them with the topic of like, oh, like you said, what did you do during the apocalypse? You know, as the thing that we pass around the table as we have a few drinks. God, yeah, I just want to go out in the world and lick people. I think that's really it.
I'll keep mine short. The record that I'm going to get is I'm just going to go to my local record store and just flip through and get something cool, man. Not anything specific, just something cool. I'm going to do my part that I can to rejuvenate local business if I can. Concert-wise, I mean, I don't know what's going to happen at this point. Adam, Summer Soiree 4, August 1. Is it going to happen? I don't know, man.
My particular, I had a music festival I was going to that weekend, because I always book things when you book things just to fuck with you. And it's canceled. So I have to imagine that, you may not be on the side of winning there.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, listen, people, if Summer Soiree 4 is quote canceled, we're still going to have it. We might have it in the fall or the winter, and it's still going to be called Summer Soiree. So I will not let viruses Stop.
I love that. I'd love if you put it on in the dead of winter and still called it Summer Soiree. I think that'd be perfect.
You know, Summer Soiree 3 almost took place on September 21, and the band guy that I was talking, the band manager, if you will, like, he was having a real problem. He's like, but it's not summer anymore. And I'm like, well, technically it is, but even so, who cares? And like, that was like a real problem for him. I mean, would you see that as a, like, that like really, like, to me, that wasn't even like a second thought. Like, who gives a shit? You know what I mean? It was weird. I don't know.
But like people are going to come with their like bathing suits and water wings. And
I guess like it was a big concern for him that Summer Soiree technically wasn't in the summer. And I'm like, who cares? I always think it's funnier that it's not, you know. But anyways, all right, listen, we got some more mail here. We love getting a mail. Podcast at punknews.org. This is from Bob Mob. And I don't know if he's clowning on me or not, but either way, I am honored. Hi, I've been trying to figure out the band name or anything related to the song John played at the intro of episode 464, and I failed miserably. Bad Boys of Summer. What is that band or song name? Any links? Have they been lost to history? Not even lyrics help. I feel like a caveman that can't figure out how to use Google. I heard it when the episode first came out, and it's been bugging me. I want to know. Any help would be appreciated.
464? Thanks from Bob.
Yeah, do you know what song that was?
I can figure it out as we speak. Hold on.
Well, Adam's listening to that. And do you think Bob Mob is clowning on me, or do you think he's serious?
I think he's serious.
464? That's a while ago.
Are you looking at notes? It's not going to be in the notes.
No, no, I'm asking you. It's 464?
464, yeah. Well, why Adam? Oh, go ahead. What's it? Go ahead, Adam.
I'll figure it out. Hold on.
Well, while Adam's looking that up, I'm going to hit another letter here. This is from Timothy. Here's what Timothy says. Hey, all, especially John. I am an instructor at Philadelphia School of Rock. Recently, the Bob Marley song Natural Mystic was chosen as a song to have the younger kids learn, which means I have to learn it as well. I have never, ever, ever wanted to listen to reggae, but I found myself really digging the song and let the Exodus album play all the way through, and I dug that as well. So now, as a 41-year-old reggae newbie, I was hoping you could give me some catchy songs and album recommendations. Nothing too out there or unusual, please. Like I said, I'm new at this. I love the podcast. Keep up the good work. From Timo. Timo, like you, Bob Marley's Exodus is how I got into reggae. I used to listen to it on my CD player while I would mow the lawn. Here is your five intro reggae album. Number one, you definitely want to get either Peter Tosh's Legalize It or Equal Rights. Legalize It is the spiritual album. Equal Rights is the political one. Maybe in the current atmosphere, Equal Rights is the more fitting one. Amazing album by Peter Tosh. Second, you want to get Black Uhuru's Anthem album. Anthem is sometimes dismissed by reggae purists as being pop reggae, but I don't know what the hell they're listening to, because Anthem is not pop reggae. It's very clean sounding, but the songs like Bull in the Pen, Mechanical Fruit, an awesome record. You want to get Mikey Dread's World War III. Mikey Dread recorded with The Clash. World War III is one of the heaviest, most energetic reggae. It's one of the most aggressive reggae albums there is, not counting down Dancehall. I almost said Dancehall. You want to get Lee Scratch Perry and the Upsetters, Super Ape. There's a few albums called Super Ape. You want the one from like 1978, I think it is. It's actually like a various artist release, but it's produced by Lee Scratch Perry. It is the sonically heaviest reggae album you will hear. It is absolutely killer. Last, I'll say, get something fun. Let's talk about Yellow Man's Nobody Move, Nobody Gets Hurt. It's one of the earlier – actually, I'm going to name one more after that, but – Nobody Move, Nobody Gets Hurt is one of the earlier dancehall albums, and it is Yellow Man in top form, having fun, and it's the earliest era, close to the earliest era of dancehall. Also, Adam and I have talked about this on the podcast before, Trojan Ska box set 1, 50 tracks, every single track is a 10 out of a 10.
It's also, I mean, it's a little bit more ska, I guess, than reggae, but like, you can't go wrong with the Harder They Come soundtrack, which is like, a bunch of Jimmy Cliff songs, kind of, and then you know, a few other like Toots and the Meidles and stuff like that, classics that are on there. Again, it's more ska than it is reggae, but you know, hey, why not?
It's all the same. It's all blue beat to ska to rock steady to reggae to dancehall to digital dancehall. It's all the same.
So yeah. So John, coming back to the person that was looking for this Bad Boys of Summer song, are you clowning me?
No,
This is some goof song that you're singing.
Yes.
Oh. Well, why do you want me to identify it?
That's why I don't know if Bob Mob is clowning us or not. So anyway, Bob Mob, the song you're referring to, Bad Boys of Summer, is a song that I wrote where for a brief period of time, I was hoping that Adam, Tom, and I would be called the Bad Boys of Summer. And that would be like our name for that aspect of the podcast. But both Adam and Tom voted vigorously against my new tag, Bad Boys of Summer. So it's not a real song. It's a song I recorded just for the podcast. What he might be hearing, Adam, is the drum and the bass line is sampled from Rock and Roll Part 2 by Gary Glitter, the world's most famous pedophile. And the guitar line is I sampled that from something else. So it's a mix of my terrible singing, the bass and drums from Rock and Roll Part 2, and some guitar line from maybe Gang of Four or something, but I distorted it, so it doesn't even really matter.
I'm glad I just had to relive that right now.
I mean, honestly, you know you've got pedophile problems when you've been kicked out of four countries for being a pedophile. You think after you get kicked out of the first country, you'd be like, you know what? I got to get my life in order. I got to stop what I'm doing. But Gary Glitter said no to that, and he went to three more countries and was successively kicked out of each one for doing the most reprehensible thing there is, probably.
I mean,
the guy's got issues.
At least he's not a hypocrite.
Fair. let's play a song and come back and hit the news. Who's got a song to play?
I have one.
Let's hear it. And what do you got?
I have "The Sender Is Blocked" by Alice Bag, because for some reason that's just really my song right now. So let her play.
And that was "The Sender Is Blocked" by Alice Bag. Alice Bag friggin' rules. I mean, Alice Bag is so cool. All right, so let's hit some news. We got some interesting news this week and some not that interesting news. On this week, the first thing that we're going to talk about is, the Lawrence Arms. They're back. A new album coming out after about 5 years or so. The album is called Skeleton Coast, and the first single was PTA. I guess I wasn't surprised by this, but the punk news community and this aspect of punk as whole, people are excited for this record, and it seemed like they were digging the track. Adam, Lawrence Arms, are you still like, yeah, this is my bread and butter? This is why I come back to punk news all the time. This is what keeps me in the scene. Is that how you were feeling?
No, but it's not their fault. I grew away from that aspect of it to the point where I was very much into, I was really into O Calcutta. I was really into The Greatest Story Ever Told and Apathy and Exhaustion before that. And I hit some mental wall when, what is it, Metropole? Is that what it was called? Their last Epitaph record came out, and I did not pay a whole ton of attention. And it's been hard for me to muster up the attention since then. And my intention here was to sit down and to listen to this and to be super into it and just to get back on the train, because I enjoyed being on the Lawrence Arms train. And that might still happen, but I've listened to this track a couple times, and I can't really recall it outside that it's a Brendan song, and it sounds like a Brendan song. And I mean, that's a good thing. Don't get me wrong. I think that they are potentially suffering from releasing this single at the moment when the world is on fire, and I'm having a hard time concentrating.
Bad time. I mean, this is a small problem to have, but bad time for music. Bad time to be. Except for Run the Jewels, actually, like, worked really well for them. And I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I mean, you're completely right. I mean, like Run the Jewels is, of course, I mean, Run the Jewels will get attention anyways, but they're going to get attention right now because, you know, they directly intersect with these issues. And as the first night of rioting was going on, like, Killer Mike was on the news, like, at a press conference talking to the people about it. So it's like, it, you know, they're, if nothing else, like the spirit of the times, right? Poor, I mean, for anything coming out into the world right now, you know, even if you put aside the riots, you know, over police brutality and all that, and just look at it from the standpoint of the virus, it's like how does one focus too much on anything right now? So I feel like really this is my problem. I will be far more into this when I have a clearer head. I don't know. Were you a Lawrence Arms person ever? Is that a band that you've latched onto?
Today was the first day I listened to them.
Because you're younger. See, I'm going on. You are younger. All right.
It's like. The way that I got into punk music was like I started listening to Green Day, then I went like way back and it was like the Sex Pistols and Dead Kennedys, and you know, I went through like a phase where it's like if it's not like in the like late 70s and 80s, it's not punk. So I didn't listen to anything new until Pump. And that was kind of like, oh, okay, I can listen to this. And then I started kind of coming into the 21st century a little bit.
That comports with our internal to punk news maybe bias about a lot of these bands that were rightly or wrongly given the org core label for a while, which is that there was a certain voice that emerged in the punk scene between like, I want to say like Epitaph, Fat, and No Idea Records during the like early mid 2000s that I think really spoke to those of us that were, well, I guess that are now in our like mid to late 30s, but it's questionable how far their reach extended like out beyond that crowd. And that your opinion there, you know, is you're a small sample size because you're one person, but it backs up my bias, I think.
Yeah, a little bit. I listened to the song and I watched the video, and I liked the song and the video. And they did like the spooky, scary skeletons, like animation kind of thing, like reminiscent of that, like 1920s Disney animation thing. So that was kind of cool.
Much like that No Bro video.
Yeah.
Yes.
Animation's making a comeback.
I showed that No Bro video to my kids because I'm like, you guys will find this delightful. And that you know, I really wanted them to be into that, and this one I have not shown them yet. If you wish, I want you to try to listen to the Lawrence Arms in the way that they are introduced to me, which is that they released a split CD with the Chinkies, which was Mike Park's punk band that he had going for a little while there. Was it not? Was it Mike Park?
It's Mike Park, and it's back, Adam. It's back. Chinkies are back.
Okay, so yeah. So anyway, it was a split CD between Lawrence Arms and Mike Park. There was a particular song that was on that CD called "Winston Tuple Your Money," and it's a Brendan Song song. And to me, I remember like I was this is in the era of my life when I was just like I was just listening to like Bad Religion and Rancid over and over, probably more than anything else. And I just remember hearing this song, and it just like it broke me. It just like it blew my mind. And just because there's something about like the way that the vocals worked in that song or something that was just not, you know, I wasn't getting that from Tim and Lars. So it it really impacted me at the time. And I'm curious how that would affect someone that hasn't heard it.
That's awesome. I will check that out and I will let you know.
And you can ignore all the rest of the songs on that CD because I don't remember what any of them are. It's just that one.
Just that one.
That one. Also, if you could be driving a blue Chevy Blazer, like a 86 between Niagara Falls and Welland, Ontario, that would really help like set the scene.
I'll write that down.
Well, speaking of driving around in an unmarked van, NoFX and Frank Turner announced a very surprising release. The reason this was surprising is, A, last week, Fat Mike announced his Dumpster Diver Singles Club, where you get 50 singles in a dumpster, and NoFX has been releasing a string of singles, and NoFX has been saying they're working on a new album. Well, on top of that, they're going to release a split album with Frank Turner. And not only is it a split album, it's the kind of album where they each cover the other song. So NoFX covers 5 Frank Turner songs. Frank Turner covers 5 NoFX songs. And there was a funny thing in the comments section where somebody said, 50% of me is excited. And then someone responded, why don't you be screwed either way? Which I thought was a funny response. this goes back to the thing. It's like, if you're a fan of either band, it'll be interesting. You'll check it out. But one does have to wonder, what is the point of a single is kind of forgettable. You know, it's a single, it's cool. But an album is an album. So you have to ask, is there anything really to be gained from full album? I mean, you know, half an album covers of one band by each band doing the other. There was that BYO split series, which was semi-popular. The most famous, of course, was Rancid and NoFX covering each other. But to me, like these things, like, it's like, I'd rather just have new material or a live album or maybe like a single. You know what I mean? Like, I don't like, I even if it was the Melvins covering Off and Off covering Melvins, I'd be like, that's cool. I'll check it out. But I'd be kind of disappointed that it's not original material or collaborative material.
I have a soft spot for weird releases like
this. Well, I do too.
So I'm kind of down for that. I will mention that the NoFX Rancid split series, reviewed by one Mr. Adam White from punknews.org, given an 8 out of 10 too, but reviewed on February 17th, 2002. So, holy fuck. Em, were you born then?
I think I was 3.
Jesus.
Adam, I distinctly remember in college, I was listening to that CD and going up and putting up flyers for like an event I was throwing in college. And I distinctly remember listening to the NoFX version of Heart of Gold. And that's before I had the Rancid's version. I'm like, oh, this is so cool. And at that time, while I was doing that, M was not even in preschool.
So I'm looking at my badly written glowing review of this record, which I don't want to read anymore because it's going to make me sad. But I remember that I was very much into seeing that happen. But I think I was really into seeing it happen in particular because those bands were, especially at that time, like I saw them as as like two contemporaries that each had grown their little kingdom. Each were like at the height of their power, whether you could argue that or not. Right. That felt very right to me at that age, getting that CD in hand. And I feel like a few other things that were on that split series didn't quite try to strike the same balance. Like there was a, was it One Man Army and Youth Brigade? Were they, was that one of
One
them?
Man Army was a part of it. I'll check it out.
Yeah. Youth Brigade? Because there was one that involved Leatherface. There was one that Youth Brigade was on, but so like, it wasn't always like bands sort of the exact same era that were on with each other. There was, of course, the Alkaline Trio Hot Water Music one, which is, I think, maybe a lot, but that wasn't even them. Or was that like a Jade Tree release? I don't know. Anyways, there was this time, regardless of what label that came out on, where you had these kind of two bands that were each sort of running at par with each other, doing one of these splits, and it was like a really exciting big deal. I don't know if NOFX and Frank Turner match up in that way.
Leatherface and Hot Water Music makes sense, I'd say. Swinging Otters and Youth Brigades, Bouncing Souls and Anti-Flag, Alkaline Tree and One Man Army.
Strangely, that the Bouncing Souls and Anti-Flag record, which is not super great, has a pretty spot-on cover of Ever Fallen in Love by the Buzzcocks that Anti-Flag plays. That is, as far as doing a note-for-note cover, pretty good. Like, it is a satisfying-ass rendition of that song, regardless of what you think of Anti-Flag. Anyways, I have a hard time seeing, like, NOFX and Frank Turner as two artists that I was expecting to interact in this way. If for no other reason than, like, Turner has been... Turner is quite the star in the UK, and I feel that he's been veering away from, you know, hanging out with the US punks to think they become more of like a serious solo artist over there. At least that was my read on it. Those last few singles that he had that came out, you know, I don't remember them too well because they were not for me. But they when I listened to them, I got the distinct impression that, like, oh, he's making a maturity run on this kind of stuff. So this doesn't really line up with where I thought Turner's, you know, was trying to steer his career. So that is curious to me. If you go through the goofy commercial that NOFX put together for this, though, I gotta say, like, the NOFX version of Turner's songs, most of which I was familiar with, they work. Like, they disarm it of any of the heartlorn like gravity that Turner would have had in that music, and, you know, make them goofy. Like they turn, like, Thatcher Fuck the Kids is turned into a ska song, like it was off of Punk and Drublic, I guess, right? Like it, or what's that damn record I'm thinking of? John, where's my NOFX discography? Not in front of me.
Thatcher Fuck the Kid. Is that a P? No.
Give me some 90s NOFX records. Come on.
S&M Airlines, no. Rint, Punk and Drublic, Having Petting Zoo, Pump Up the Volume, So Long and Thanks for All
so
the
So Long
the
and
shoes.
Thanks for All the Fish is what I was thinking of. Thank you. Yeah, like it sounds like it could have been something off that era, which is fun in my mind. So I don't know. I feel like, on the one hand, I don't know who's asking for this, but on the other hand, I know most of these songs. So maybe I'm the audience. John, maybe I'm the audience.
Maybe. I mean, maybe. I will say I do appreciate how NOFX does more daring releases than many of their other punk rock contemporaries. But I feel a lot of them are kind of throwaways too. But maybe that's cool.
And does this? We just talked about how you like hopped between different eras of punk music as you were getting into it. Does Frank Turner, NOFX, does that raise any particular emotion in you?
Oh, I love NOFX. They're great. Frank Turner, I heard one song. I think it was Recovery. And it was like, oh, this is kind of cool. And then I listened to it for a while. And I, for some reason, I didn't listen to any of his other stuff. So then I just assumed that all of his songs were going to be that way. And they weren't. I guess they're more like heavy, like sad, kind of. And that's not really what I was going for. But I'm going to check this out because I watched the commercial and the commercial was great. And the like NoFX versions of the Frank Turner songs, like I don't know what the originals are, but they sounded really, really cool. And I want to check them out because, you know, like there have been some really good splits. And I think it could be like a benefit to have two bands that are like different doing each other's songs because they'll do them in like different ways. And maybe it'll be like, you know, hear a really good NoFX cover of a Frank Turner song and then listen to the original and then really get into Frank Turner, you know? So all up for that. Just because that's how I found out about Cancer Bats was Cancer Bats and Single Mothers did like a switcheroo thing, and I really liked their cover. I think they covered Switch Off, and I really liked it. So then I started listening to Cancer Bats, and they're great. What were you gonna say? Sorry.
What was your perspective on First Ditch Effort?
First Ditch Effort. I liked half of it, and half of it kind of fell flat.
I don't know a whole lot about NoFX. I was never really a fan. I just decided to review that record out of the blue, and I thought that record was really cool because it was fast, it was punkish, but everything else has been like Sad Mike, which I thought was interesting for a little while, but I'm kind of over Sad Mike, you know?
Yeah, never really got into the Cokie the Clown stuff. I think I bought the first album and I couldn't even do the second one. Like, good for him for having a creative outlet, but yeah.
Emo Mike is the version that I am, I think, the least interested in. And however that creeps into the NoFX sound is where I think I fall off from it a little bit. Like, I like a lot of the latter day NoFX stuff that people at the time just said was horrible. And I think that like a lot of it, when you revisit it now, I think compared to like everything else in the universe, is not that bad. Like, I remember like I was really into Pump Up the Valium when it came out, and like there's a few like super cringy gross out songs on that record, just because that, you know, that you know, Mike's gotta try to throw one of those in every once in a while. But like outside of that, it seemed pretty damn solid as a punk rock record to me, and I kind of stand by liking that one. But I remember at the time everyone shit all over it when it came out, and I think that's like always happened. Like, NoFX just has that, they're an easy pinata for the punk scene sometimes, so whatever they do, people just jump at it. But you know, on average I'm a NoFX fan, I think.
One thing I didn't want to mention is I don't know if Adam and them watch this or not, but there was a quick video on Mike's Instagram of Angela Moore Fishbone and Fat Mike singing a version of "You Say Potato, I Say Potato." You guys watch that video?
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah, man, I love that video. You know, Fishbone is one of these bands. So if you haven't seen it, go to Fat Mike's Instagram, and it's Mike and Angelo saying, "You say potato, I say potato. You say tomato, I say tomato. Let's call this Trump thing off," which was funny. But you know, a lot of bands that I like love Fishbone, and Fishbone is a band that I just have not been able to get into. It's like, I'm like, well, maybe it was just like a product of his time, you know? Like, I'm willing to admit that I'm probably wrong here. I might be wrong. It sounds kind of like just like aimless bad jazz punk, you know, with like Red Hot Chili Peppers and Faith No More, all those bands that were like, I mean jazz, funk rather, like that were like really influenced by funk. But I watched this video, and you can just see that like music just explodes out of Angelo Moore. So A, maybe like you got to see him live to get it, which is definitely possible, because I think they were actually established before they really started putting out records. So maybe the record stuff that I've heard from like the late 80s and early 90s is like not their best stuff. And maybe their best stuff was when they were like a ska band from the late 70s and early 80s before they recorded anything. But man, I mean, Angelo, so the point being is, A, I'm going to try to get in the Fishbone again. So if anybody has any recommendations, please send them my way. But I mean, music just, you can just, watching Angelo Moore, he is just a born performer. You can just like he looks so, and I'm not dissing Mike, because I think Mike's an interesting person, but like Mike looks so awkward and kind of dorky next to Angelo. And Angelo, it's only like a 20-second clip, and Angelo is just feeling the music, and he's such a performer. Music just explodes out of him. I don't know if you guys had any thought watching that video or any Fishbone recommendations.
I don't have a Fishbone recommendation. He oozes charisma, but you know.
Right. Man. Yeah. So I got to get into Fishbone. All right, listen. Let's hit a couple more stories, and then we'll come back, and maybe we'll blow through one or two more topics. The Sewer Cats. This is an M. Moore selection, a pick. The Sewer Cats have released a video. The video is for Cat Gifts, and it is off their 2020 EP called Zelda. And maybe M. Moore can tell us, is that named after the video game or someone named Zelda? And what did you think of this video for Cat Gifts or GIFs? I think Adam says GIFs.
No, I don't.
Oh, you don't? It's GIFs?
It's GIFs.
And what's your hot take?
I saw it and I thought it was the best thing ever. And it's like, this has to go on Punk News, because it's just like the song is fast and catchy and like punky, but like the lyrics are really positive. And it's just about sending people gifts of cats. And the video is a bunch of gifts of cats. And, you know, like the world's a stressful place and you need to take like a bit of time and to de-stress. And the video, I think, is only like 45 seconds. Like, it's really, really short. And it's just, you know, 45 seconds of just like cute cats and fun punk song and, you know, a little bit of like goodness in the world.
I dug it. I agree with you. And you know, there is a lot of sad things happening and frustrating and angry things that make you angry happening. So a little bit of fun here and there. It's good and it's healthy. I liked how this was like a super short, super punky song, but it's about cats, which I thought was humorous, fun, and clever. And I dug it, so I will check out this band. Adam.
You could not do that in a genre other than punk rock, and that's sort of what makes punk rock great. Is like you could just crank out something weird and goofy and delightful and it's you know totally a fucking valid punk rock song as much as any other.
Man, punk is so great. And let's so this video doesn't take itself very seriously. Let's talk about somebody that might be taking themselves a little bit too seriously. And it hurts me to say this because I am maybe not the world's biggest fan, but I would say I'm in the top 2% of fans of this next gentleman. Adam, would you say I'm in the top 2% of fans, top 5%?
Of anyone I've ever met, you're at the top, John.
So, man, listen, Alice Cooper, before punk rock, before hippie rock, there was Alice Cooper, one of the freakiest and darkest and still one of the greatest rockers of all time. He put out a video called Don't Give Up, and it was about how you can make it through the coronavirus. And I got to say, I'm glad Alice is trying to do stuff still. He's not resting on his laurels. He is always putting out new and archival stuff, and I respect him. But do we need Alice Cooper to give us the courage to trek through COVID-19? This almost seems to be him trying to make the issue about him. Like I don't know if I need Alice to inspire me to make it through quarantine. You know what I mean? Like, I guess it's interesting that he's being positive because he's usually negative, but I just thought this was kind of overblown and a little schlocky. It's a video called Don't Give Up by Alice Cooper.
Yeah. I mean, I don't fault them for wanting to try to help, right? But it's the kind of thing where, like, it runs a little bit counter to his brand. Like, if you're trying to inspire people to, you know, persevere, You can't do that and be, you know, like an edgy sleaze rock weirdo at the same time. Like, those two things just don't really line up. It's going to be that kind of thing is going to be kind of hokey, I think, regardless of of who you are. I mean, there was a video that I don't know if we ever talked about it on Punk News, but there's a video from a few weeks ago where Joey Shithead went and so he is an elected. So this is the lead singer guitarist of DOA, of course. He is an elected city councilor in the city of Burnaby in British Columbia. So he wrote a song that was sort of like, you know, thanking the frontline workers and healthcare workers and trying to get the people of Burnaby to, you know, persevere through their diligent social distancing and isolation and all that kind of stuff. So it's him with an acoustic guitar standing on the steps of a city park, and, you know, at the other side of the steps, like at a six foot distance away from him, is the mayor of the town playing bass in the song or something like that. And they sing this little inspirational ditty that he put together. And, you know, it's similarly toothless, but at least on Joey's one, it's just him standing in the park playing a little ditty that, you know, like it's clear he wasn't trying to offend anyone, given that he's a city councilor. Like, despite the fact that, like, a week prior, DOA put out that treason record, which is, you know, full of incendiary things about Trump and whatever else. Like, this is just him being jovial, I guess, and trying to help. The Cooper video, it's very 90s in the way that it's produced.
Yeah.
And it just trying to deliver that level of inspirational shit while also doing this this gritty, like, spinning cyberpunk globe and all this stuff, I don't think works. Now, if Cooper would have, like, just been, you know, standing in a field singing this song a cappella, like, that might have worked better. I think it's like the presentation and the production just work against it.
Do these inspirational videos ever work? Like, remember the one where all the rich celebrities did, like, the Imagine thing, and it was like a total, like, laugh riot.
We are,
like,
the world, or do they know it's Christmas? All these things.
Does that ever work?
Well, I mean, like, you know, you wait 20 years, and then Fucked Up covers your song. That's about all you can do. Because that happened, right? Did they know it's Christmas? I think ended up being a Fucked Up song.
Right.
Those things are always weird because it either says nothing, or it tries to be clever and then ends up offending someone. Like, there are lines in that Do They Know It's Christmas song that are really rather like Western centric. And meanwhile, they're singing about famine in Africa and stuff like that. And it's just like, maybe they don't know it's Christmas because they're not Christian. Like, there's parts in that song that are strange to me.
Yeah. Yeah. So, let's play a song. Who's got a jam?
All right, so here you go. So I was building a playlist before we started recording this because I'm scheduled to go record an episode of my little quarantine radio show, and it felt sort of dumb just to do the normal show, which is like I play a bunch of these like Canadian bands that I happen to be writing about on the newsletter, especially given like all of this, you know, chaos and fervor in the streets in the US and Canada and everywhere else right now. So I put together this playlist where it's entirely black artists that I wanted to play, and I was trying to find specifically black artists that were playing rock and roll and things like that to kind of at least keep with the genre theme of the show. So I got a whole bunch of those sitting here right on deck. So I'm going to play one. So this is a song called Torpedo. It's by a Toronto band called the OBGMs, which is an acronym for something goofy that I can't remember, but I have to say it because it's pretty ridiculous. Hold on here. Let's find out. What are the OBGMs? Do-do-do-do. The OBGMs stands for the Oh Baby Gimme Mores, which is which is just silly. But anyways, this is a rockin' song. They're a pretty cool garage punk band out of Toronto. So the song is called Torpedo. It's from a self-titled record they released a couple years ago. They have a new single that is out right now called Cash, and you should go check it out too. It's on your streaming service of choice. But anyways, this is one I like. It's called Torpedo. It's by the OBGMs out of Toronto. Here you go.
Torpedoed by the OBGM. We're going to wrap this up with a collection of stories and maybe one story after that. So listen, a bunch of bands that in 2014, 2015, 2013 were like the bands, like bands that like everyone in the punk scene, and these were bands that straddled the punk and like the indie scene, which kind of doesn't really happen as much anymore. But these bands were bands that, like, everyone was talking about all the time. I know a lot of the punk news editors at the time were huge fans, at least a couple of these bands. Actually, most of these bands, except for one. And they're all releasing stuff again. And, well, it doesn't seem like these bands are making waves like they used to. I could be wrong. And so it goes to how much does buzz really get you? Trash Talk are releasing a new EP. It's their first release in like 6 years or 7 years. It's been a while. It's produced by hip hop producer Kenny Beats. Joyce Manor are releasing a compilation of stuff from before their first album. It's going to be on Epitaph, and it is called Songs from Northern Torrents. And most of it is stuff they burned to CDRs and sold at their earliest shows, which I was at a lot of those early shows because I lived in the Bay Area at the time. They played there a lot. And it was funny about Joyce Manor. Like, I used to see Joyce Manor all the time, and I just didn't care. I saw Classics of Love open for Joyce Manor a couple of times, and, like, I left before Joyce Manor played. I used to see them, and they exploded, and I was like, really? But, I mean, I guess that they do have a certain intensity and speak to a youthful perspective that's maybe 3 or 4 years younger than Adam and myself, and which is why maybe they blow up. And also Japan Droids, they're going to release a live album. The live album is called Massey Effing Hall. and it's out June 19 or October 2, digital and physical, via Anti. And Adam, I'm sure you'll remember when the first Japan was a Celebration Rock came out, like everyone was talking about Japan Droids. Everyone. And I even went to a concert, and I'll give my perspective after Em and Adam speak, but Japan Droids were like massive. And didn't seem like these tracks really moved much of a dial. And am I wrong? Like, are people like getting hyped about these recordings, or are they just kind of sitting there?
It doesn't really seem like a lot of people are that excited about them. And I don't know if it's because of, again, the time that they're coming out and they're being announced, just with everything happening. I don't know if that's taking like the excitement away from the releases, or if people like don't really care about the bands as much as they used to. So I think the real like test of it will be when, you know, the virus is gone and hopefully some good things happen. And then when people can kind of think about things that are really life and death, maybe then like everyone will be like, oh my gosh, I didn't know that like Trash Talk had something new coming out. Like, oh, there's a new Joyce Manor thing and Japan Droids. I'm going to find their live album. I think that's how it might go.
So I don't have a huge read on Trash Talk, because I guess whenever that band was the talk of the town, I was elsewhere.
They were like the band of hardcore, like the most dangerous band in hardcore. Like, it was, I saw them a couple of times. They toured with Off.
Yeah, so I mean, I don't have a read on what that scene is doing in the first place. So whether they're tuned in or tuned out, hard for me to peg there. Joyce Manor, I feel like still has the goodwill that they were riding on. They in my mind slot like right in next to Jeff Rosenstock as being a voice of a particular generational anxiety. Like I could imagine that. You put on a song like, say, like Constant Headache or something like that, and you instantly wreck everyone in the room that is between like, you know, 28 and 34 or something like that, right? Like they're a band that I think still has a lot of impact. Now, does their early stuff necessarily resonate that way, or are there people clamoring for it? That I don't know, because I don't know how unavailable this material was in the age of the internet, right? That remains to be seen. Japan Droids are a band that I have never quite figured out where they fit. And I say this as like Mr. Canadian music guy. I definitely get the appeal. Don't get me wrong. Like they're first couple, the first couple records they put out are incredibly anthemic. They're just like full of these like giant, you know, pump your fist and scream at the sky, overblown anthems that are at the same time, like, you know, very, very good natured and not, you know, not particularly, you know, gritty or challenging or anything like that, but just, you know, the feel good rock songs that are, you know, that are the perfect kind of thing that you would expect to find, like, you know, playing out of the car stereo on Saturday night as you're like tooting through town kind of thing. So like, I get the appeal there. I don't know who their contemporaries are. Like, so as much as I try to focus in my writing that I've been doing on Canadian music, on like various scenes and various connections between people and stuff like that, like you never find them mentioned in the past few years. You never find them, you know, you ever find them touring with any of these other bands? Like, the most that they seem to intersect with any of my writing at this point tends to be like, oh, well, someone worked with a producer that also produced one of the Japandroids records. And I don't know if that's just because they've been sort of off grid since 2017 when that last record came out, and really 2017 forward is when I've been doing this project, or if they just sort of exist in their own bubble, and maybe it's a little bit of both. Now, that all said, doing a live Massey Hall record is a thing that I think every Canadian band has on their bucket list of stuff to do. John, I don't know, like, does Massey Hall mean anything to you?
Not really, honestly.
So it's a big seated concert hall in Toronto. It was built in like the 1890s or something like that. It's considered like a national historic site in Canada. Went through like a huge amount of renovations back in the 40s. Seats around like just under 3,000 people, I think, like 2,700 people or something like that. But playing Massey is something that you can only do if you've hit like a certain stage of both respectability and just, you know, the fact that you could fill it. And a lot, it's considered really like a notch on your belt that you've done a Massey show. And most of the time when a band plays Massey, you better believe they're going to record it for something. So like the most famous of these that I guess like people in the wider rock world would be familiar with is that like Rush had a 1976 live album called All the World's a Stage. So that was recorded at Massey Hall. But then like Neil Young had
All the World's indeed a stage, but we are merely players, performers and portrayers. Catch the drift.
Yeah. So Neil Young did a performance there in 1971 that was recorded and not released until recently. Like the Neil Young's Live at Massey Hall record didn't come out until like the 2000s at some point. But everyone, it's one of those things where like if you play there, you know, you record it, you film it, because it's going to sound amazing because that place has just insane acoustics. I doubt it has much of like a crowd interaction presence because it's a seated theater, but it is one of these rooms that is just famous for just being what it is. So going in and recording a live record at Massey Hall and calling it Massey fucking Hall is very neat. I'm down with. So and maybe that's the kind of place where Japandroids material, which is just like just these like big reverby echoey anthem songs, maybe work better than not. So I'm curious to hear this, but man, like I couldn't tell you like who's a Japandroids fan, like what kind of person goes to a Japandroids show? Like are they jock bros? Are they punks? Are they like, do snobby indie rock people still give them the time of day? Like, I have no idea. I have no idea who listens to Japandroids, and that's not meant as a slight. It's just meant as like a blind spot in my universe. But John, you've seen them. So what's the deal?
Well, it seems like Adam's a fan. And so I'm not trying to be a jerk here, but I went with a crew. Actually, it was Brian Yancey. It was Kira Wisniewski. It might have been Joe Pallone, and it was a kind of show where I didn't know anybody there, but everybody else knew everybody else there, and people were like, "Oh, I can't wait for Japandroids," and they played, and I'm like, "It was fine," and people like stood there and clapped and were energetic, but afterwards they were like, "Oh, that was so incredible," but it seemed that it was a country where people wanted it to be incredible, so they were kind of lying. Like I've seen like George Clinton destroy the place, you know. I've seen Melvin's destroy, and like when the band destroys a place, like afterwards, people are like, "Oh my god, I just got my head torn off." And I feel it was a lot of hype. You know, I was like, they kind of rock, but there's no danger here. There's no raw power. You know, it's just positive vibes. So I feel as though Buzz can only get you so far, but maybe I'm wrong. I'll try to be a hater.
That lines up with my impression so far. I mean, again, they've been at arm's length because I guess timing wise, they've not directly run into what I've been doing these days. So I'm curious, but I mean, it's quite possible that calling your live record Massey Fucking Hall is the most dangerous thing about Japandroids, but you know, that's, I'm down for the title.
I'm down for live albums. Let's talk about one last thing that is probably even more divisive, or less divisive because people just don't care at this point. Long Beach Dub All-Stars, surprising to me, they're putting out a brand new album. Actually, it's already out. It's out this week. The new album is called it's self-titled, so it's one of these We're Back albums, so now we're self-titled again, which I actually don't mind bands doing. Rancid did to great effect, as some other good bands did as well. The lineup doesn't include, if the listeners don't know, Long Beach Dub All-Stars was the band that formed after Sublime, including Eric Wilson, Bud Gow, and a whole bunch of guys that were actually part of the Sublime crew. What a lot of people might not realize is, even though Sublime is only technically three guys, like, a lot of people contributed to their recordings, and Opie Ortiz and Marshall Goodman were actually almost full members of the band, even though they weren't credited as such. So anyways, Long Beach Dub All-Stars is back, and it doesn't have any Sublime guys, but it's got a lot of the Sublime adjacent guys. Marshall Goodman, Ed Campworth, Jack Maines, Opie Ortiz, Roger Rivas, Tim Wu, Michael Happel, another big Sublime contributor, Matthew McEwen, and Devin Morrison are in the band now. The new album includes contributions from Tippa Lee, who, of course, did a EP with Tim Armstrong that everyone probably forgot about. And the question is, A, do we need Long Beach Dub All-Stars? Do we want Long Beach Dub All-Stars? Does anyone care? And also, are they doing more to honor Sublime's legacy than Sublime with Rome, which, as one of the Punk News commenters mentioned, which I think is funny, might only have one out of the three original members of Sublime, but it does have two out of three of the original members of Sublime with Rome.
I just like to point out that Long Beach Dub All-Stars debut album, Right Back, that came out in 1999, reviewed on Punk News by one Adam White on May 22nd, 2001. That's even older than the other one.
Did you like it, Adam?
I gave it 2.5 stars.
Ooh, see, too soft, right? Too wimpy, like not enough of the Sublime smack, right?
The problem is that I'm going to read this and I'm going to start trying to edit writing that I wrote in 2001, and that's a bad road to go down. I think it's weak. I thought it was weak. There was stuff on there that I enjoyed.
You mean right back? See, for me, it's like, like, it was all, like, the sunny good vibes of Sublime with none of the danger, which Sublime really did have some danger involved.
I remember at the time, and actually there's a footnote of my review that mentions this, is that, so I saw Long Beach Dub play, they played the Warped Tour that year that they emerged, and I remember the Warped Tour experience with them was very positive for me, because the crowd that's there is all there because they were, I mean, at the time they were all there because they were, you know, big Sublime fans. And this is the only way that you were going to make that, you know, get anything close to it. And the band knew that was their appeal. And whenever they were playing through those old Sublime songs, which they did quite a bit, like they Long Beach Dub played tons of Sublime material during their sets at that time. It wasn't just their new stuff. And as they played those songs, you know, like Opie would be, you know, gesturing to heaven every 2 seconds, you know, whenever there was one of these like Super Bradley kind of related lyrics that came up in the song. And it was very endearing to watch. And it was very, it felt good just like being in a crowd of people that were also fans of that weird era of 90s ska music, who were all there together. It was a nice little celebration. So there's a part of me that has a certain amount of you know, goodwill stacked away for these people. Right Back was not really a good album. The record that came after this, I don't even remember. They may have had more since then that Punk News doesn't have in their archives because we decided we weren't paying attention to them at that point. Right now in 2020, when I'm stuck in my house and summer is just about to happen, and I have decided that smoking weed is something that I do now, I'm kind of interested. Like, I'll sit down and listen to this. I want to hear what it's like. Like, can I turn it on this Saturday if it's going to be sunny and sit out on the back of my deck and, you know, drink beer and put my feet in a kiddie pool or something like that? Like, maybe that's what it works for.
I'm looking at the set list of Long Beach Dub All Star set list. It's mostly Sublime, which I'm down with. For me, I'm a huge Sublime fan. I was not a Long Beach Dub All Stars fan. But in this atmosphere, you know, beggars can't be choosers. And I think I may be coming around the Long Beach Dub All Stars. I was listening to this record. And honestly, I mean, it doesn't have as much punk as Sublime did. But what it does have is it does have a lot of approximation of early and mid 80s dance hall, kind of like Yellow Man. But not so much Yellow Man, more like, what's his name? Half Pint and Eka Mouse. There's a strong Eka Mouse influence. And some of those other guys like Welton Irie, guys like Brigadier Jerry. And those kind of guys. So I was kind of digging it. I mean, honestly, I don't think they're making a whole lot of money doing this. So they got to be just doing it for the love of it, which I think you – I don't know where I stand on Sublime with Rome. I mean, I wouldn't go pay to see it, but do I fault them for doing it? I don't know. And what's your stance on Long Beach of All-Stars and Sublime with Rome?
Today was the first day I heard of Long Beach Dub All-Stars. I like Sublime with Rome. I think they had a really unique sound. So if this band is kind of like Sublime adjacent, then I will check them out and just kind of see what they're all about. The video on the story, I think, is the full album. Two?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So I'll definitely check that out sometime because I'm curious to see like what they sound like.
If anything, what I'm shooting for with this, John, is it seems just at this point so far removed from so far removed from Sublime, but also given the fact that Sublime with Rome exists and has become like is now past the point where it's a punchline, where it's now like it's boring. Like whenever we see people making Sublime with Rome jokes, we're like, yeah, yeah, yeah. Like that was funny 4 years ago. Right. This seems like almost quaintly harmless. And I'm kind of interested in it from that standpoint. Like it is so far past the point in life when anyone could possibly be upset about Long Beach Dub All Stars that I kind of want to check it out for that reason. Like that these guys are still doing this at this point must mean that you know that they're in it for something, and you know I want to see what that is.
Is it a tragedy or is it a comedy that Badfish, the world's most famous Sublime cover band, makes 10 times the amount of money that Long Beach Dub All-Star make?
So much of the post Sublime universe is both tragedy and comedy.
well, if there's anything that underscores Sublime more than that, I don't think you could say it. Listen, you can always reach the podcast at punknews.org. M, any final words that you want to kick out to the listeners?
Stay safe. Look after yourself. Look after one another.